Chapter 2. Emotional Expressions. People and dogs share expressive faces and use surprisingly similar expressions. "He's just fine with visitors, aren't you, Buddy? He's fine, really he is." Buddy's owners had asked me to their house to help them with their beloved Labrador Retriever, who had bitten their neighbor the week before. Barbara and Peter couldn't understand it. Buddy was a loving family dog who doted on their children, was easily house-trained as a puppy, and was a star at obedience school. They couldn't have loved him more, and the feeling seemed to be reciprocated. Members of the family could take away his food, pull toys out of his mouth, and trim his nails without eliciting the slightest protest. In their eyes, it seemed that the bite had come out of the blue, and although they had responded responsibly by calling in a behaviorist, deep down inside, they didn't think it would ever happen again. I did. Buddy may have been fine to them, but as I entered the house, he and I were having another unspoken conversation. To judge by his expression, Buddy's side went something like this: "I don't know who you are, and I'm nervous about that. For all I know, you might be dangerous. If you stay there and don't move forward, I'll stay here. But if you move fast or reach your hand toward me, I'll be forced to protect myself. I am uncomfortable, on guard, and perfectly willing to bite you." Of course, all that is just a bunch of words I strung together to describe my interpretation of Buddy's emotional state and his probable behavior if I tried to pet him. I can't possibly say exactly what was going on inside his brain, but I can make predictions about his future behavior on the basis of his expression. Rather than showing the relaxed open mouth of a dog who loves visitors, Buddy kept his jaw closed tight, except when his tongue flicked out in an expression of anxiety. His entire body was stiff and unmoving, in sharp contrast to the loose and flexible body of a relaxed dog. Buddy's eyes were big and round, rather than the squinty eyes of a dog who loves company. As if that weren't enough, Buddy was staring dead straight into my eyes, and his own eyes were as cold as ice. "I am going to bite you. Honest." Peter and Barbara thought Buddy was fine because he wasn't barking or growling at me, but to me, Buddy had a neon sign over his head that said, "I'm going to bite you if you get any closer." Good dog trainers and behaviorists learn to read these signals in their most subtle form because if we don't, we get bitten. We hate it when that happens, so we learn fast. There may be controversy about how dogs experience emotions, but there's universal agreement that a dog's expressions have a lot to tell us about what he's likely to do next. As Darwin noted so long ago, many of a dog's expressions are blindingly obvious. Few people misinterpret the combination of deep growls, a snarling face, and flashing teeth. But other expressions, like the ones from Buddy, are more subtle. That doesn't make them any less important in predicting what a dog is about to do, and the better you learn them, the more you can be proactive rather than reactive. Some people are really good at reading their dog's visual signals. I have observant clients who keep dangerous dogs out of trouble because they can see their dogs tense up long before they strike out. Others, I don't know how else to say it, are virtually illiterate in the language of dogs. The ability to read a dog's face and posture seems to have no correlation with how much you love your dog. I've seen clients who were devoted to their dog, and yet, while they were chatting about how their dog Lucky is cheerful 24/7, Lucky was pacing around my office with a tense, anxious face. Differences in sensitivity to the expressions of others aren't confined to dog owners. Not surprisingly, some of us are better than others at reading the facial expressions of members of our own species. Introverts are better at reading the expressions of others, while extroverts are more expressive themselves. According to Paul Ekman, who has been studying facial expressions around the world for over 40 years, women and men are equally adept at reading facial expressions, but there is tremendous variation between individuals of either sex. Dog trainers see the gamut, from people who read dogs like a book to those who seem almost oblivious. This shouldn't be surprising. Even other animals vary in their ability to read faces. The primatologist Barbara Smuts described a male olive baboon who received favors from females by being especially adept at reading subtle indicators of their emotional states. Training matters. No matter where you fall on the continuum, the good news is that there's a significant practice effect on the ability to read facial expressions, whether on a dog or a human. I am reminded of this every time I show a particular video sequence of an adolescent dog hovering over a stolen toy. The dog trainers go on alert when the dog's face becomes still and his eyes go round because they know what's coming next. In contrast, the general public watches the video in innocent silence, gasping in shock when the dog lashes out, snarling and lunging toward the owner. The professionals know that freezing in place with rounded eyes is a threatening posture, but because the dog was neither growling nor showing his teeth, the general public is stunned by his attack. You can see milder versions of this all the time in training classes. Most often, we'll see an expression of distaste on a dog's face while an oblivious owner does something he thinks the dog loves. Whether they're slapping a touch-sensitive dog on the head, "Gosh, she just loves this," the owner says while the dog grimaces and turns her head away, or shouting, "Good dog," to a cringing, sound-sensitive cocker spaniel, otherwise loving owners commonly miss expressions as obvious as fireworks to people with experience. Although I know of no research on our ability to interpret the facial expressions of dogs, there's a lot of research on our ability to read the faces of other people, and much of what we've learned can help us better understand our dogs. For example, study after study shows that the more training you receive about the meaning of facial expressions, the subtler the signals you'll be able to read. A good example is our ability to detect deceit in others, surely a behavior with which we've all had a lot of experience. The easiest form of dishonesty to learn to detect is an insincere smile. Natural smiles go far beyond the mouth and affect the muscles around the eyes, but insincere ones usually only include movements of the mouth. Most of us aren't aware of the difference on our own faces, but extreme examples are easy to spot on others, and with training, you can get really good at seeing subtle examples. Less can be better. The reason most of us aren't as good as we'd like to be at identifying dishonest expressions is that we haven't been able to look for the subtle changes in facial expressions that are usually generated by even accomplished liars. The best human lie detectors are U.S. Secret Service agents, CIA agents, and clinical psychologists who study lying. These are the only groups of people who can reliably detect dishonesty, and it's their training and experience that give them this advantage. The rest of us aren't as good at it as we think we are. Parents, take note. The more training and experience you have at reading expressions in dogs or people, the more your brain is able to focus on the important signals and ignore the extraneous ones. At any given moment, your brain is flooded with information, only some of which is relevant to any particular issue. In many situations, it turns out all you really need is a tiny piece of information, as long as it's the right piece. Called thin slicing by the researchers who discovered it, it's the equivalent of finding your lost wedding ring in the woods because your brain is focused on sparkly and is ignoring everything else. The dog trainers who watched the video of the dog about to lunge were thin slicing because they knew that, in that context, freezing with a closed mouth was the only thing they needed to see to predict the attack. Thin slicing is best illustrated by the work of psychologist John Gottman, who has been studying interactions between married couples for decades. After eavesdropping on more than 3,000 couples, Gottman can listen to a couple chatting about nothing in particular for an hour and then predict, with 95% accuracy, whether they will still be married in 15 years. Other people, even marriage counselors, aren't able to do any better than guessing because they haven't learned which visual or verbal expressions signify a healthy relationship. After years of analyzing tiny changes in expression and tone of voice, Gottman and his colleagues have found that signs of defensiveness, stonewalling, criticism, and contempt are red flags that trouble is brewing. But all they really need to see is the expression of contempt by one of the partners. Picture someone ever so slightly rolling his eyes, to know that the marriage is doomed. No matter how many times the members of a couple smile at each other, laugh, or cuddle, if one suggests contempt for the other with the subtlest of expressions, they might as well call the lawyer and get it over with. These results represent far more than just some trendy pop psychology that makes interesting reading. There's overwhelming evidence from a variety of studies that experienced observers are able to make accurate judgments about the feelings of others based on amazingly small samples of their behavior. The psychologist Elisha Babad and his colleagues found that viewers needed only 10 seconds of a video clip to accurately judge whether a teacher liked the child to whom he or she was talking. The teachers themselves were quite sure that they were concealing their feelings, but their faces gave them away. That's because, more than any other muscles, the muscles of the face are hard to control consciously. Our eyebrows can change the tiniest bit when we're concerned, angry, or frightened, but we don't consciously decide to make those movements in the same way that we decide to move our arm. There's an essay on your face. It's hard to consciously control your facial muscles because they are intimately connected with the emotional centers of your brain. Much of this wiring bypasses the rational thinking part of your brain altogether, so the process of conscious decision-making is out of the loop. That's why face-to-face contact is always the best way to communicate, and why behaviorists and trainers always want to meet your dog face-to-face. Our species' ability to use language may allow us to say anything we want, whether it's true or not, but our faces remain more honest indicators of our internal emotional state. Somebody came to my office once on an ostensibly friendly visit, and I'll never forget seeing his eyes go cold and hard while at the same time he was complimenting me. I knew instantly that the words were meaningless because the message on his face expressed his real feelings. Those feelings weren't pretty. They made the hair stand up on the back of my neck, but at least I had gotten an accurate view of how he really felt. The eyes of my not-so-friendly visitor were icy cold, but I don't think I would have been so aware of them if I hadn't seen that same expression in the eyes of dogs who are about to bite. 17 years of reading the faces of dogs who may be about to bite me has made me much better at reading the faces of people. Other trainers have the same experience. It's so common that we swap stories at conferences about how our improved ability to read faces has helped us through tricky negotiations with an increased awareness of a person's true feelings, regardless of the words he or she uses. That wouldn't be true if we humans didn't share many basic expressions of emotions with our dogs. The faces of dogs are almost as plastic as our own, able to morph from disappointment to joy in the blink of an eye. We read our dogs' faces as we read the faces of people, looking for information about how they're feeling and what they might be about to do. Experience may improve our ability to read between the lines, but as Darwin reminded us a long time ago, the basic emotions of fear, anger, joy, and disgust look the same on the faces of our dogs as on the faces of our human family. It's no coincidence that highly social animals like people and dogs have exceptionally expressive faces. Solitary animals, pandas for example, have relatively impassive faces that make it difficult to figure out how they're feeling. That makes sense because if you're a solitary animal, it doesn't matter whether others are able to evaluate your emotions. There are no others to begin with. But if you live in a tight-knit group, it matters greatly whether you're scared or frustrated because your emotions are excellent predictors of what you'll do next, handy information when you're affected by the behavior of those around you. Emotional expressions act like lubricants in social interactions, and the more important your behavior is to those around you, the more important it is that they are able to read your emotions from your expressions. Thus, the expression of emotion and the ability to read it aren't random. They're crucial components of a social relationship in which the partners can choose how to behave. The participants in a complex social relationship must be able to take the emotional temperatures of their partners, and that's hard to do if the emotions are hidden inside. The important role of emotional expressions in social relationships is highly relevant to our interactions with dogs. Dogs behave as though they expect us to be able to read their expressions accurately. When we don't, either because we aren't able to or because we aren't paying attention, both dogs and people can get in a lot of trouble. The motion of emotion. It makes sense to assume that our dogs' expressions are honest indicators of their internal emotional states, just as in our own species. After all, the word emotion is mostly made of and derived from the word motion, and that turns out to be a telling relationship. An emotion, as described by the neurobiologist John Rady, is a movement outward, a way of communicating our most important internal states and needs. As we discussed in Chapter 1, the expressive movements on our faces are part and parcel of our emotions. You simply can't talk about them as if they were separate things. If you want to understand your dog's emotions, you need to be able to read the expression on his face. The rest of this chapter is designed to polish your ability to understand your dog's emotional expressions. Although everyone gets better with practice, the good news is that we all have a solid foundation on which to build. In general, people are pretty darn good at reading intense emotions from the facial expressions of other people, no matter where they're from or what language they speak. Paul Ekman, who has spent decades studying cross-cultural expressions of emotion, has found that anger, happiness, fear, surprise, sadness, and disgust look the same the world over. When he asked members of an isolated tribe in New Guinea to pretend your child has died, their faces moved into the same expression you'd see on the face of a Japanese computer programmer or an American shoe salesman if you had asked them the same question. In spite of the vast cultural differences between people, we all express our basic emotions the same way. Not only do our faces change in predictable ways when we're happy or sad, our expressions are interpreted the same way on every continent. Dozens of studies show that people in many countries and cultures, including people in isolated hunter-gatherer tribes, make the same interpretations of photographs expressing basic emotions. Even children who have been blind from birth, who can't possibly have learned by imitating others, express emotions that can be read correctly around the world. There are cultural differences in how likely individuals are to express basic emotions. The Japanese, for example, are less likely to express negative emotions than are Americans, but both cultures agree on what the emotions look like once they are expressed. As we've discussed, many of these expressions are shared by dogs and people, but reading them through floppy ears and long, fuzzy muzzles can be a bit tricky. Even people who lived with dogs all their lives can benefit by training their brains to look for those important signals, to thin slice, so that they can better understand what's going on inside their dog's head. It's particularly valuable to learn to perceive and interpret what Paul Ekman calls micro-expressions, or fleeting and subtle indicators of emotion that require training to notice. The more skillful you get at this, the easier it will be to know when Buster isn't comfortable being petted, so you can move on before his discomfort turns into a growl, a snap, or bite. You'll be able to see when your dog is starting to become stressed during a training exercise and know it's time to lighten things up or clarify his confusion. You'll also be better at knowing when your dog is really truly happy, and so you'll get better at making him so. A note of caution. One caveat before we move on to highlighting important expressions in dogs. There are a few things, unrelated to your dog's actual emotions, that can influence your interpretation of her expressions, and it's useful to keep them in mind. One is your own experience, which research has shown affects how you read another's face. For example, in one study, children who had been physically abused in the past were asked to label photographs of faces as fearful or angry. The facial expressions in the photos had been computer modified to combine equal amounts of both emotions. Abused children were much more likely than other children to label the faces as angry. Additionally, it's tempting to project your own emotions onto your dog. My dear mom, who loved both her dogs and the visits from her daughters, consistently pointed out that her dogs looked depressed during the last days of a daughter's visit. "Look at poor Jenny," she'd say. "She knows you're leaving tomorrow, and she's just miserable about it." A glance at Jenny found her sound asleep on the couch, looking exactly as she had the day before and the day before that. Mom did this so much, we began to tease her about it. She put up with our teasing, but I don't think she ever stopped believing that long before we got out the suitcases, her dogs knew our departure date and shared her feelings of sadness about it. Be careful, then, that you're not projecting your own feelings onto your dog. Remember the advice in the first chapter and use your skills of objective observation to read what your dog is trying to tell you with her facial expressions. Shape matters. One last thing to remember is that the shape of your dog's head also has an influence on your perceptions. Because of our extensive efforts to create designer dogs, your dog may have anything from the baby face of an American Cocker Spaniel to the grown-up, wolfy look of a Malamute. We know that people respond differently to a baby-faced person than to one who looks more grown-up. The key features that make faces look infantile or grown-up are the size of the forehead in relation to the rest of the face and the size of the eyes. Babies have proportionately larger eyes and foreheads than adults, and if you change just the size of the forehead, keeping all else the same, you can change how people respond in a variety of circumstances. For example, all else being equal, we are more protective of people who have baby-like faces, and we are less likely to judge them guilty of a crime. There is even evidence suggesting that a baby face inhibits aggression and elicits nurturance. The facial proportions of children who have been physically abused are more likely to resemble those of older people than are the facial proportions of non-abused youngsters. The importance of facial proportions appear to be replicated in our interactions with dogs. I am often amazed at the lengths people will go to defend an aggressive dog with a puppy-like face, even strangers who have been bitten by the dog. Being bitten by a German Shepherd, a dog with a more adult-like face, is another matter. Of course, the overall size of the dog is always a factor, bigger dogs being more frightening than smaller ones. However, I've seen some truly dangerous baby-faced dogs of all sizes, dogs who have ripped and torn enough human flesh to count as weapons of mass destruction. But these dogs are rarely judged as dangerous as adult-looking dogs who have caused far less injury. Even sheep seem to respond to infantile versus grown-up features on the face of a dog. I once saw a flock of sheep chased around a pen all day long by out-of-control corgis, border collies, poolies, and spaniels at a herding dog clinic. But when a docile German Shepherd walked into the ring, the sheep panicked as if he'd walked in with an automatic rifle. They literally crawled over one another in a desperate attempt to jump out of the pen when the well-behaved, prick-eared, wolfy-looking dog entered the ring and quietly sat down. Like it or not, our own reactions share something with those of the sheep, but at least we can be consciously aware that we are being influenced by anatomy as much as by honest expressions of emotion. What follows are the expressions and behavioral changes that professionals count on to tell them what's going on inside the head of a dog. It is not an exhaustive encyclopedia of all the expressions and postures made by dogs. I have highlighted some books that do that in the reference section, but I want to focus here on some of the more subtle signals that allow professionals to thin slice a dog's expressions and evaluate his internal state in an instant. It will help to go back and forth between the text and the photographs to get the best sense of what to look for and to compare the expressions of dogs with those of our own species. Open mouth, closed mouth. One of the most important things to notice about a dog's face is whether her mouth is open or closed. Relaxed, happy dogs tend to have relaxed and often slightly open mouths. In its extreme form, biologists call the look the open mouth play face. Aspects of this expression are not unlike a human smile. If you smile right now, you might notice that your teeth are not touching and your lower jaw is relaxed rather than tense. When dogs come to my office, I am always aware of whether their mouths are open or shut. Most dogs who come for appointments start out with their mouths closed up tight. I don't even think about petting them at that point. Not until their mouths relax and open up an inch or two. Keep in mind that most of the dogs I see in my office have serious behavioral problems, most often aggression-related, so I see a disproportionate number of dogs with their mouths locked shut. Whether a dog's mouth is open or closed is so important to me that I write in my records how long it takes a client's dog to relax enough to open her mouth. 10 minutes? 30? Some dogs never relax enough to open their mouths in the presence of a stranger, and that tells me a lot about the seriousness of the problem. Your dog isn't going to have her mouth open all the time, no matter how joyful she is, but if you learn to watch for open mouth, closed mouth, you'll be amazed at how much you learn about her internal emotions. You might see her close her mouth as she sees a squirrel across the road or another dog walking down the street. Dogs will close their mouths when they're on alert, and watching a mouth go from open to closed is a good way to know your dog has begun to concentrate on a change in the environment. Dogs will also close their mouths when they're serious about something. Mine often close their mouths when I put them on a down stay for photographs. A closed jaw by itself can't tell you whether the dog is alerting to the chirp of a chipmunk or signaling to you that he's about to bite, but going from open to closed is a key indicator that your dog is no longer in a happy-go-lucky frame of mind. Look at the photographs in the middle of the book for some examples of dogs with open and closed mouths, and compare the open-mouthed dog faces to the faces of happy humans. The similarities are truly striking. We all recognize the relaxed face of a happy-go-lucky dog, but fewer people are aware of the opposite, the dog whose mouth is closed and tense. Start watching for when your dog's jaw opens and shuts, and in just a few days, you'll understand your dog better than you did before. There are times, however, when an open mouth on a dog can confuse us. People often interpret a high-energy dog with a wide, open mouth as extra-friendly, but sometimes these dogs are physically overheated or emotionally aroused. "Oh, he just loves everyone," I've heard owners say, as their dogs repeatedly leapt up toward my face, their mouths open to give off the heat generated by their highly charged bodies. Unable to cool their bodies by sweating, as we do, dogs open their mouths to cool down, so don't assume that every open mouth is an invitation to cuddle. However, there's a lot more to a face than a mouth, and just as we do in our own species, we can learn the most about how a dog is feeling by looking at all his facial features together. When bodies freeze like popsicles. If a dog's mouth is closed and his entire body is frozen in place, you'd better pay attention. This is the thin slice that professionals learn to look for early on, because if you ignore it, there's a possibility you're going to get bitten. If I meet a dog who reacts to me by closing his mouth and stiffening his body, I stay well away from him. I might talk to him in a sing-song voice, keeping my own body loose and fluid, but I'm not going to reach out and pet him. A stiff body and a closed mouth are signs of a dog on high alert, whose next move may be to lunge forward. Buddy, the dog in the earlier story, stood like a statue for several seconds when I met him at the door. Because he was so stiff and was staring straight into my eyes, I read him as a dog who was uncomfortable about my presence and willing to go after me if I made the wrong move. There's a downside to this knowledge, because now you're going to join the hapless group of people whose hearts stop beating on a regular basis when they see a little boy across the street petting a new dog in the neighborhood, and the dog's mouth has closed and his body has gone still and silent, and the adults continue to chat on in oblivion while you wait for doom to fall, teeth to flash, and little Johnny to start screaming. Sorry. Ignorance can be bliss, but knowledge can avoid problems, so if you're witness to a scene like the one above, you can call Johnny over to you or try to ease the tension by calling, "Who wants to go on a walk?" You'll also know to tell a visitor to stop petting your own dog if your dog's mouth shuts and her body goes still. If the general public learned to look for this important warning signal, tens of thousands of bites could be avoided every year. Dogs frequently use freeze as a signal to other dogs. If you see two dogs greeting each other who are both stiff and still for more than a second or two, you'd better do something to break the tension. Things might get dramatic if you don't. Clap your hands and suggest walkies. Throw a ball, sing out, "Who wants dinner?" But whatever you do, don't go all stiff and immobile yourself, or you'll make things worse. You can also see a less problematic version of freezing when dogs are romping together. First, they'll be frolicking with loose, relaxed bodies, and then you'll see one dog stop and freeze for just a moment. I used moment on purpose. A second is much too long a time period for this signal. This type of freeze may last no longer than a quarter to a half of a second, so watch closely. Better yet, watch a videotape you can play in slow motion. Often, the freeze is accompanied by a turn of the head directly toward the other dog. A good descriptive title for that is turn to face. Tulip does this when a dog she's playing with attempts to mount her. Queen Tulip loves to play, but nobody gets to mount the queen. Mounting, In play isn't about sex, it's about social status, and Tulip isn't interested in sharing her title. If you know what to look for, it happens oh so fast, you can see Tulip whip her head around and freeze for less than half a second as a dog tries to mount. The other dog will stop what he was about to do, perhaps play bow to return the mood to frolicsome, and off they'll go, bodies back to being fluid and relaxed. You may have seen such a micro-freeze in some dogs when you trim their nails or pull burrs out of their tails. Groomers and trainers know to go on alert when a dog abruptly whips her head around toward their hand and freezes her body for a microsecond. I take it as a threat, a clear warning not to repeat what I just did. If a dog does this with a closed jaw, she is most likely communicating to you that she is objecting to what you are doing. It's a great signal to be able to spot, and if you can do it, you'll be ahead of 99% of the dog lovers in the world. Whether another's body is relaxed or stiff is important information in dog-to-dog communication, and there's no question in my mind that dogs interpret similar postures in humans in the same way. When I met Buddy, I was careful to stay relaxed and fluid because going still yourself is a signal to the dog that you, too, are on guard. That one change in your body might be enough to get you in trouble, or, if used in reverse, prevent a bite from happening. A good example of that occurred at a seminar during which I saw a cute little Lhasa Apso snuffling her way across the floor. As she turned to me, I began wagging my body back and forth like some crazed two-legged Labrador, along with turning sideways, adopting an open-mouth play face, and crinkling my eyes in the universal sign of friendliness. As I approached her, she turned and cuddled against my leg, raised her head, and leaned into my hand as I stroked her neck. "Oh my," said her owner, "that's not what she usually does. She's here as a case study because she snaps at people when they try to pet her." Just as predicted, when the dog came up on the stage and was approached by strangers, she stiffened with concern. If I hadn't stopped people several feet away from her, I have no doubt she would have snapped or bitten. The difference was in the approach. I was focusing on behaving like a friendly dog, while most people were acting the way people naturally do. The usual approach of all people when greeting human or dog is basically the opposite of a polite approach in dog society. Dogs approach one another from the side, curving their line of approach and avoiding eye contact, while keeping their bodies loose and fluid. We do the opposite. We keep our bodies upright and relatively still, and make direct eye contact while reaching out with our paws before we've even so much as exchanged scents. This is so important in canine interactions that professionals learn to breathe deeply and keep our bodies fluid and relaxed, even if we're feeling afraid of the dog in front of us. Make that especially if we're feeling afraid. If you go still, close your mouth, and stop breathing, the dog you're with may decide that he had good reason to be on guard, and he will be more likely to do something aggressive. If you want to greet dogs like a pro, be sure to keep your mouth open slightly and relaxed. Slowly wag your shoulders and your hips back and forth just the tiniest bit, and move your head to the side as if you were cocking it. Dogs cock their heads to get more visual and acoustic information when they're curious about something, but they don't do it when they're nervous. Don't go so far overboard that you end up scaring the dog. I have never seen a human behave like this before. But consciously stay loose so you don't lock up yourself and inadvertently send out signals of potential aggression. I'll never forget a session long ago with a client in which her dog was freely interacting with my dog, Pip. Before she retired at 13, Pip seemed to love working dog-dog aggression cases with me. Pip adored other dogs and was a master at calming those who had been aggressive to others because they were nervous. As usual, I asked her if she wanted to work with this particular dog, and she answered by running to the gate with enthusiasm. Sometimes she'd take one look at a dog and walk away, and I always respected that, assuming she was better than me at reading another dog's emotional temperature. Pip seemed enthusiastic about working with this particular dog, so I let them greet each other off-leash in a half-acre fenced pen behind the house. But the dogs weren't the only ones in the pen. I hadn't paid enough attention to the owner, who was extremely nervous about the arrangement. While the dogs greeted each other, she stood to the side, frozen in place and barely breathing, while I tried to assuage her fears. My mistake, because while the owner stood stock still beside me, her dog looked up into her eyes, just for an instant. The owner's face was as stiff as a Halloween mask. Her eyes were huge with fear, and her mouth was rounded as if she was saying, "Oh." This is the face of a dog about to attack, and after one glance at it, that's exactly what the dog did. Before I could react, he attacked Pip, growling and snarling while she rolled over onto her back in fear. I had the dog off in an instant, and Pip wasn't hurt, but both of us were shaken up. Pip got more than her share of treats that week, and I got less sleep than usual, worrying about what might have been. Pip is 15 now, and the incident was long ago and far away, but I've never forgotten the hard-won lesson of how important our expressions can be to a dog's behavior. Wagging the dog. Stiff, frozen postures are so important that they trump the signal that people often associate with friendliness, a wagging tail. Tail wagging is most commonly interpreted as a signal of friendliness, but that can be a big mistake. What is friendly is a loose, relaxed tail that wags the hindquarters along with it. Wagging from the shoulders back, I call it, and it's a great indicator that the dog is happy to see you. However, if the body of the dog is stiff, the mouth is closed, and the tail is raised and only wagging from its midsection, watch out. A stiff body and a stiff tail base constitute the thin slice that tells you this dog isn't necessarily feeling friendly, no matter how hard the tail tip is wagging. Those of us with cats know that swishing tails and stiff bodies don't always mean good things, and in this case, it's accurate to generalize that to dogs. Forward and backward, straight on, or sideways. It's worth making one more comment about a dog's overall posture before we go back to facial signals. That's because, just as in our species, all of a dog's expressions have to be taken in context with the signals being given by the rest of her body. One of the most important of those is the direction of a dog's energy. When you meet a dog or watch your dog meeting others, ask yourself, which way is the energy directed in the dog's body? You'll notice many dogs whose bodies are shifted forward, whether they're greeting you at the door or saying hello to another dog. Dogs can have their bodies leaning slightly forward as a sign of friendliness or as a sign of being on the offensive. Either way, the dog is letting you know that he's in a relatively confident state. If a dog comes toward me willingly, wagging his tail from the shoulders back in a full body wag, head lowered, mouth open, and eyes squinty, I'm going to squat down and have a love fest with him. If a dog's body is shifted forward and he's stiff and immobile, with his mouth closed shut and his tail wagging only from the tip, I'm going to stay where I am and ease the tension by turning away or pulling out a treat or a ball. However, if the dog is close and begins to advance on me, mouth still shut, body still stiff, I'll turn my head quickly toward him. There's that turn to face I was talking about, and speak in a low, sharp voice. This is a dog who is on the offensive and who needs to be stopped without adding to the tension. As soon as I can, I'll face him off, then break the tension by saying, "Want to go on a walk?" or "Dinner." On the other hand, dogs whose energy is directed backward are dogs on the defensive, even if they're growling and flashing their teeth. These are dogs who have a lot of fear in them, and you need to be sure not to put any pressure on them by cornering them or reaching to pet them. Remember that a dog on a leash or a tie-out is essentially trapped, which is undoubtedly why so many bites occur in that circumstance. In The Other End of the Leash, I talk at length about how you can use a dog's awareness of whether another's body is directed forward or backward, so I won't go into it here. However, just keeping in mind whether a dog is directed forward or backward can go a long way to helping you predict his future behavior. You can also learn a lot about a dog's motivation by watching him approach other dogs. Polite dogs greet one another by approaching from the side, as if following a curved line toward the other dog's flanks, rather than taking a straight, head-on approach. Direct, straight-on approaches are part of polite greetings in our species, but not in dogs, so pay attention to this aspect of the dog's body as well. You might have noticed that I approached the nervous Lhasa at the seminar by turning my body sideways. You can do the same thing when you meet a new dog. Just turn slightly sideways and approach as if walking forward along a curved line. You'll be amazed at how many dogs will be thrilled to meet you. Fuzzy grins, offensive puckers. We talked earlier about how our mouths are relaxed and open when we're smiling. The other key component of a smile is the movement of the corners of the mouth. Retracting the corners of the mouth and raising them is what makes a smile a smile. Even insincere smiles widen the mouth toward the ears. Try it yourself. Go to a mirror and smile with just your mouth, and then let your smile move all the way to your eyes. The difference is striking, both in your expression and how you feel when you do it. A sincere smile, which engages the muscles of the mouth, cheeks, and eyes, is the easiest of all expressions to read. A smiling face is evaluated as happy by virtually everyone around the world. Interestingly enough, unlike expressions of fear or anger, smiles don't happen as often when we're alone as they do when we're with others. Human smiles appear to be important signals in social contexts because they are almost always given while facing another person. Bowlers who get a strike usually don't smile until they turn around to face their friends. Olympic athletes receiving their medals smile when they turn to face the crowd. Of course, we all smile on occasion when we're alone. I can't seem to stop doing it right now as I write this. Are smiles catching like yawns? But not with the frequency with which we do it in public. Wherever we smile, and whether we smile sincerely or not, our smiles are always defined by the mouth being partially opened and the corners of the mouth pulling upward and back toward our ears. Paying attention to the corners of another's mouth isn't unique to our species. Many species of mammals pull the corners of their mouths back when they're nervous, which is why ethologists call that movement a fear grimace. In some species, in social contexts, it's called a submissive grin because it's always given by an individual in a subordinate position. Like many other animals, humans pull back the corners of their mouths when they're scared. Universally, our species expresses fear by retracting the corners of the mouth, along with rounding the eyes and raising the eyebrows. Even human smiles aren't always expressions of pure joy. Many a smile relates to nervousness rather than happiness. Ethologists suggest that our smiles derived from submissive grins in which the person smiling is signaling that he has no offensive intentions. As you can see in the photographs, dogs move the corners of their mouth too, and just as in humans, the direction of the movement tells you a lot about how the dog is feeling inside. The corner of the mouth is called the commissure, and dogs, wolves, and coyotes all pull it back when they're being submissive, defensive, or fearful. Even when dogs are playing, you'll notice it's usually the one on the bottom whose commissure is pulled back. That's not random. It's an expression of the dog's internal state. The defender has the commissure pulled back, while the pup, in the role of offensive tackle, has the commissure forward. Humans also move the corners of our mouths forward when we're on offense, in our own version of what's called an offensive pucker in dogs and wolves. The commissure of an angry human moves in the opposite direction of a smile, moving forward toward the center of the face rather than back toward the ears. Make the mad, pouty face of an angry 5-year-old right now, and notice how your mouth closes and your lips pucker forward. Dogs do something very similar, although I wouldn't say that they are always angry when they're doing it. I'll bet the farm, though, that they're not scared or submissive. An offensive pucker is one of the best indicators I know that a dog is ready to go on offense, and it doesn't seem surprising that it correlates with our version of an angry face. Look at the photographs and consider the difference, in both humans and dogs, between a commissure pulled back and a commissure pushed forward. Like a lot of things, the movements of the corners of the mouth are blindingly obvious once you learn to look for them, but they get little notice until they're pointed out to you. Start to pay attention to your own dog and ask yourself which way your dog's mouth is most likely to move and in what circumstances. If your dog lunges at another dog with his commissure forward, he's in a very different state than if he retracts it in a fear grimace. He could be barking and lunging in both cases, but the position of his mouth will help you understand how he's feeling inside when he does. If your dog puckers her mouth forward when your child tries to take a toy out of her mouth, she's telling you that she's standing up for what she believes is her property and that she's willing to use her mouth to defend it if necessary. If she growls at a visitor with her calmatures retracted, she may be afraid of strangers and so needs help overcoming her fears when the doorbell rings. You can see how these facial signals can be useful when you're working on a treatment plan for a dog who snaps at visitors or won't let you take the rawhide chew toy away. We'll talk in later chapters about how to match treatment plans with dogs in different emotional states, but for now, concentrate on being a field researcher in your own living room and learn to watch which way your dog's mouth is moving. Think of it as lip reading, one species to another. Smile for the camera. Dogs do something that looks to some like a human smile and to others like an aggressive baring of their teeth. Smiling, dogs raise their upper lips, usually so much that the skin over the top of their muzzle becomes wrinkled. Because the lips are raised vertically, the dog's teeth are exposed. There's nothing like a full set of flashing white teeth in the mouth of a predator to get an emotional reaction out of a primate like us, but these dogs don't seem to have an aggressive thought in their head. Surrounding those shiny, sharp teeth are a loose, relaxed body, a lowered head, and the friendly, squinty eyes of a dog who is glad to see you. You see the smile most often when dogs are greeting you after an absence or welcoming strangers into the house. Smiling dogs usually have a goofy look about them, with their whole body wagging from the shoulders back and their head parallel to the ground. I remember one house call at the home of a golden retriever. The owner said the dog was becoming aggressive to them and to visitors, although he had yet to snap or bite. I was greeted by a tail-thumping, body-wagging mush bucket whose lips seemed to have a mind of their own and kept rising upward to expose his teeth. This dog's posture was the exact opposite of Buddy's, who never showed me any teeth, but who stood rigid and cold-eyed as I entered. The golden all but melted into a puddle as I entered the house, but there were those teeth, huge and white and gleaming, and right by my face. It is understandable that visitors weren't quite sure what to make of them. What a pleasure to be able to tell the owners that their golden was as dangerous as a stuffed dog, and that those teeth had more to do with a human smile than a warning of potential aggression. We don't know exactly what emotion a smiling dog is expressing, but it doesn't seem to be associated with anger or fear-related aggression. One good guess, my favorite at the moment, is that it's an expression of a dog in an ambivalent state, with the primary emotion being one of submission or docility. I think of it as the kind of goofy, nervous grin you'd see on the face of a shy adolescent guy when he picks up his date for the first time. Tongue flicks. Another important expression of your dog's internal emotions is the tongue flick, in which your dog's tongue extends straight out of the mouth and retracts again immediately. Don't confuse it with the sideswiping tongue of a drooling, hungry dog who anticipates dinner. In a tongue flick, the tongue is moved in a straight line, forward out of the mouth, and then immediately pulled back in. These little tongue flicks are either expressions of low-level anxiety or are appeasement gestures from subordinate dogs to higher-ranking ones. How far out the tongue goes is probably dependent upon the extremity of the emotion. Once you start looking for tongue flicks, you'll see them everywhere. Your dog might tongue flick when you pick up her paw to trim her nails, or perhaps when that big bruiser of a Chesapeake Bay Retriever comes over to play. You can see an example of it on a video clip that's all over the internet, in which the handler of a newly acquired police dog is being interviewed by the local hometown reporter. Squatting down just inches from the dog's face, the reporter places his hands on either side of the dog's head as he begins to stand back up. The dog's mouth is closed up tight, and although he isn't growling or showing his teeth, experienced dog handlers can tell that he's uncomfortable with the situation. The reporter didn't pick up on the signals, but he probably figured things out after the dog bit him full on the face, right after the dog's tongue flicked out in a clear expression of anxiety. I often see dogs tongue flick at the vet's office, at training classes, while greeting other dogs, and when owners hug them or do anything else that makes them uncomfortable. I also see tongue flicks from submissive dogs who are continually signaling to those around them that they don't want to be in charge of anything, ever. Many other species exhibit tongue flicks when they're feeling submissive or slightly anxious, including humans and many other species of primates. How often a dog tongue flicks can tell you a lot about her personality. My sweet, submissive Pip tongue flicks to just about everything, including me when I quietly walk over to pet her. She loves me dearly, at least I think she does, but she is so submissive she responds to almost any social encounter with a tongue flick. I stopped working her on sheep when a ewe turned to face her, and Pippi responded by wagging her tail and tongue flicking. Border collies the world over would have been appalled. On the other hand, Cool Hand Luke almost never tongue flicked. Luke loved taking charge of recalcitrant sheep and lived his life brimming with confidence. The only time I remember him tongue flicking in his prime was at the vet's when he was being treated for cancer. Years later, when his kidneys were failing, I had to give him subcutaneous fluids twice a day through a huge needle that caused him to whimper plaintively every time I inserted it. After 4 days of that, he tongue flicked one morning as I approached him. It was so out of character that I stopped dead in my tracks. I was sure he'd done it because he had learned to associate me with pain. I called the vet's office in distress, that's code for sobbing uncontrollably, and told them I simply couldn't be the one to hydrate Luke any longer. In hopes that extra fluid would keep his kidneys from crashing, we kept it up for a few more days, but I drove him to the vet's twice a day so that our last times together were characterized by love rather than fear. I'm so thankful I knew what that tongue flick meant because, as sick as Luke was, he never tongue-flicked again, and we were able to spend our last days together in a bittersweet haze of love and grief. You can tell by the stories above that every dog is different. Start watching your own dog to see when her tongue flicks forward out of her mouth. You might never see it, or you might see it all the time. Picking up the back paw elicits it in some dogs, because most dogs don't like having their back paws handled. Submissive or slightly nervous dogs will tongue flick in response, but status-seeking ones will go stiff and clench their jaws. And the in-between dogs will squirm and squiggle, lick your hand, or roll over on their backs. If you get a good idea of your dog's baseline frequency of tongue flicking, it will help you know when she's nervous or feeling submissive. You can also use it around other people's dogs. A dog who wags his whole body and comes toward you with head down, tongue flicking in and out, is submissively soliciting attention. If, however, a dog stands still, tongue flicks out of a closed jaw, and then stiffly turns his head away from you, mind your manners. You are being told loud and clear that Fido is uncomfortable and isn't interested in a date right now. Ignore this message at your own peril. I'm not yawning because I'm bored. Yawning can be another sign that your dog is uncomfortable. Yawns are often given by slightly anxious dogs, and all trainers and behaviorists pay a lot of attention to them. Of course, sometimes dogs yawn when they're waking up and are just sleepy, so don't worry that every time your dog yawns, it's cause for alarm. However, paying attention to your dog's yawns can help you understand her a lot better. Yawns themselves are an excellent introduction to what have been called calming signals by a Norwegian trainer named Turid Rugas, who's written a fascinating book on talking terms with dogs. In it, she argues that many of the signals discussed in this chapter are used by dogs to calm other dogs, and she cites yawning as one of those. She even suggests that people try yawning themselves to calm their dogs in stressful situations. However, she agrees that yawns are produced by anxious dogs and are usually seen when dogs are being hugged in veterinary clinics or during stressful encounters with others. This raises two interesting issues related to the function of many of the signals we've been discussing. One is that the same movement can have many meanings, just as a smile in humans can signal nervousness or joy. If a yawn is due to sleepiness or relaxation, then it makes sense that it would have a calming effect on others. If a yawn is the result of anxiety, then its effect on others is less clear. A second interesting question relates to the function of the yawn itself. Is the yawner the sender of the signal, purposefully attempting to calm or excite another individual? Or is the expression an involuntary result of the sender's internal emotions? I suspect that the latter is most often the case, at least with signals like tongue flicking and yawning. An anxious dog who is tongue flicking or yawning is probably not intentionally trying to calm another individual. Remember, we talked about yawns being involuntary, and tongue flicks might be as well. However, it makes sense that such behaviors can indeed be called calming signals, in that they are the opposite of the signals of a dog about to attack. Dogs who tongue flick and yawn are not radiating the kind of "I'm not afraid and I'm about to bite you" message sent by a frozen body and hard, cold eyes. It makes sense that signals like yawns could influence the emotions of the dog who sees them, and so it makes sense to call them calming signals. Yawns are an especially interesting signal, not only because they are usually involuntary, but also because they are almost impossible to watch without yawning yourself. We're still not even sure about the function of yawning, but we know that watching others yawn elicits a yawn in return in most people. Even just talking about yawns, or writing about them for that matter, can cause people to yawn. In a perfect example of our emotional interchange with dogs, a yawning dog can set you off just as easily as a yawning person. Wrinkles are good. I hope no one ever uses Botox on dogs, because a dog with wrinkles around her eyes is a dog who's glad to see you. The eyes of dogs are wonderful sources of information about what's going on inside their minds. It takes experience to learn to interpret some of the expressions within a dog's eyes, but wrinkles around the eyes are easy to see. Just like smiling humans whose eyes crinkle with delight, dogs who are happy to see you often have squinty eyes with lots of furry crow's feet around them. Look for the muscles around their eyes to constrict, just as ours do when we are feeling happy or amused. Compare the eyes of the happy-faced dogs and humans in the photographs, and you'll see that in both species, the muscles around our eyes are important parts of our expressions. My impression is that the more submissive the dog, the more his eyes will crinkle up. So I'm not sure that squinty eyes correlate as directly with happiness as they do in our species. It seems that the most docile dogs squint during greetings, an observation similar to the reports of wolf researchers, who include crinkled eyes as one of the many expressions of submission or appeasement. On the other hand, dogs who are alert, who are surprised or frightened, often have rounded eyes. In this, they are not unlike humans, who round their eyes in fear or surprise. You can see clear examples of these emotions in the photo section on the faces of both species. Pip used to be afraid of thunder, and when she leapt up into the bed after an especially loud boom, her eyes would be as big and round as pancakes. Rounded eyes are a sure sign that a dog is either frightened or highly aroused. Dilated pupils also correlate with fear or arousal, but they can be hard to see. Sometimes the last thing you want to do is get closer to a dog to see whether her pupils are dilated, but you can always tell when a dog has rounded his eyes from their normal shape. Keep in mind that different breeds naturally come with differently shaped eyes. Malamutes have almond-shaped eyes, while Chihuahuas and Cavalier King Charles Spaniels come with big, round ones. What's important is how the eye changes from its neutral state. If you become acquainted with the appearance of your dog's eyes when you're hanging around the house together, you'll be more able to see subtle changes in eye shape when you're at the vet's or meeting a new dog in the neighborhood. Warm eyes, warm heart. There's another quality about the eye that is important, but it's harder to describe. Anyone who has ever worked with aggressive dogs knows what I mean when I talk about a dog's eyes turning hard. Clients often will describe a cold look in the eyes of their dog right before he snaps or bites. This change is not about pupil dilation, and it's not change in color, but something about the eyes changes so that they harden like cooling steel. The look resembles what we call a glare from a human. Friendly, relaxed dogs have the soft, dewy eyes that we associate with babies and lovers, while dogs who are about to hurt you have the hard eyes we associate with cold-blooded killers. You may never have seen this look from either species. If you're lucky, you never will. When I first got serious about dog training, I spent a few years looking for it and was frustrated because I thought I just wasn't skilled enough to see it. Then a visiting dog turned to face me when I picked up something she wanted, and in an instant, everything changed. Her eyes, as hard and cold as a Wisconsin winter morning, seemed to cut right through to my heart. Long before my conscious brain said, "Oh, that's the look," my body had reacted by shooting adrenaline throughout, first stopping my heart for a moment and then sending it pounding like a hammer in my chest. In a perfect example of thin slicing, my brain knew right away that out of all the signals coming from her face and her body, the only important one was the hardness in her eyes. I can remember exactly what they looked like to this day, although I have virtually no memory of anything else about the incident. I wish we knew exactly what it was about the eye that physically changes, but all we can do is guess. Jeff Bayless, my major professor in graduate school, came up with the best hypothesis I've heard so far. It's based on the fact that the eyes of mammals actually move back and forth all the time, so rapidly and so minutely that we don't notice it. This is one of our brain's ways of getting as much information as possible about the world around it. By moving back and forth, or triangulating, the eyes can continually send the brain information from two different perspectives. The shifts might be small, but they must be valuable, or else we wouldn't spend so much energy on them. When this movement increases enough to be visible, something that usually happens during a seizure or some other electrical dysfunction in the brain, we call it nystagmus. Perhaps the usual microscopic movement ceases when the emotions of a dog or a human change to pure anger. This hypothesis is consistent with our knowledge that an alerted brain stops dead in its tracks, just for an instant, before responding with a storm of electricity and chemical messages. We can reasonably speculate that there is an equivalent micropause in the body's machinery right before it acts on the emotion of anger. Whatever causes this change in eye expression, don't worry about training yourself to see it. If a dog's eyes go cold and hard on you, believe me, your body will let you know. Just be sure to pay attention to what your body is trying to tell you, because it's sending you some very important information. I'll never forget calling the animal behaviorist John Wright after I'd seen one of my first clients. I was just starting out, and John had been working with aggressive dogs for several years, so I valued his opinion. I didn't call for advice about a treatment plan. I called for solace, because I had become deeply afraid of a standard poodle whose eyes raised the hair on the back of my neck. Like many novices, I had a fantasy that my commitment and knowledge should preclude feeling afraid while working with dogs. That fantasy fell apart as the dog began to leap toward my face, higher and higher each time, without a shred of friendliness in his eyes. In seconds, my body and brain were in complete agreement. "Be afraid," they said. "Be very afraid." I had been afraid and felt like a failure. "How could I be so scared and call myself an animal behaviorist?" I asked John.
"How could you call yourself one if you weren't?" he countered. "The dog was threatening you, and your body knew it right away."
Listen to your body when you're working with dogs. It's giving you invaluable information. He was right. The dog's eyes were cold as flint, and now that I have 17 years' experience under my belt, I have no doubt that I was being threatened by a dog who was serious about hurting me. That case helped me learn to use my body's wisdom to my advantage and to welcome those signals rather than trying to suppress them. Expressions of the eye may be the hardest to describe in words, but experienced canine behaviorists and dog handlers of all descriptions agree that they are key to the way we evaluate dogs. Psychologists tell us that humans read fear and anger mostly from the eyes, and happiness from the mouth. Certainly, an offensive pucker is an important cue to anyone observing a dog, but nothing compares to the look of pure rage that can be expressed by a dog with hard eyes. If you encounter a dog who turns his head to look directly into your eyes, and whose eyes go cold and hard as he looks into your own,
You are much better off trying to ease the tension by speaking quietly and calmly, changing the focus onto walkies or dinner, than you are confronting the dog directly. A direct stare with a hard eye usually means the dog is willing to fight, and unless you want to be involved in a barroom brawl with someone better armed than you, you're better off finessing the situation until he calms down. I don't want you to teach your dog that all he has to do is glare at you to maintain possession of the couch or the chewy toy, but those problems are better solved before a face-to-face confrontation occurs, not during it. If your body runs cold when a dog looks you directly in the eye, listen to your body, stop what you're doing, look away yourself, and change the focus to walks or dinner. Then put your energy into finding a skilled and understanding behaviorist to help you out. Keep in mind that a hard eye is a bit more difficult to read in a dog with blue eyes, which tend to look a bit colder than brown eyes. It's also helpful to remember that herding dogs, like border collies, were bred to show what's called eye, which translates into an almost obsessive direct stare, originally used to intimidate sheep. It's not necessarily aggressive, although it can get downright tiresome when you're trying to relax on the couch and your dog stares at your face throughout an entire feature-length movie. Whale eye. There's another expression related to the eye that the pros look for when evaluating the emotional state of a dog, but that's not intuitively obvious to the dog-loving public. Labeled whale eye by Sue Sternberg, an expert on canine aggression, it appears when your dog's head and eyes aren't pointing in the same direction, so you see the whites of your dog's eyes on one side or the other. Look at the photo of the dog exhibiting this expression, and you'll see what I mean. This nervous dog is so anxious about what he's looking at that he wants to turn his head away, but he's too afraid to take his eyes off the anxiety-provoking object of his focus. I see this expression most often in dogs who are fearful of strangers or of unfamiliar dogs. If you want to get a good look at this expression on a human, just go to a scary movie. When something terrifying occurs, you'll see people turn their heads away but keep their eyes riveted on the monster on the screen. Our rational brains may understand that the danger is confined to the screen, but our emotional brain knows at any moment the alien in the movie is going to leap out and attack us, so we need to keep our eyes on him at every moment. Dogs appear to evaluate the situation in a similar way, because fearful dogs turn their heads away as if they can't bear to face the monster, but keep their eyes riveted on whatever it is that has scared them. This expression is very different from the hard, direct stare of a confident dog. Either dog could cause all kinds of trouble, but the dog that shows you whale eye is telling you in no uncertain terms that he's really, really nervous. You'll do him no favors if you either ignore it or force him to confront his fears right then and there. There is an exception to the caution about a dog showing the whites of his eyes. I've seen this same expression on the faces of completely relaxed dogs who appear, for want of a better description, to be purely and simply amused. Look at Luke's face on the last page of the photographs. His head is partially turned toward me and partially toward the camera, while his eyes are looking directly toward the lens. You can see the same look on the faces of Elizabeth Marshall Thomas's dog in her author photo for The Hidden Life of Dogs. It's not a look I've seen often, and I want to be crystal clear that I'm only guessing, but it looks for all the world to me like the dog is sharing a joke with the person he's looking at. In Luke's case, I suspect he was laughing at my hair. Looking away. While we're talking about the direction of a dog's head, it's important to be aware of the times your dog goes out of her way to avoid looking directly at a person or another dog. You'll see this when one dog turns her head away as she passes by another dog, perhaps if there's tension between them or the dogs haven't met each other yet. If you start paying attention to which way a dog's head is oriented, you'll discover that dogs spend a lot of energy avoiding direct eye contact with one another, unless they are good buddies. The best place to see this is in a group photo of people and dogs. All the people will be looking at one another or the camera, while all the dogs are looking away from one another. This isn't a problem, at least not if we respect our dogs' attempts to stay out of conflict with one another. Some dogs appear to use a look away to diffuse tension, and it's often a sign of a well-socialized, friendly dog. Luke and Lassie both worked hundreds of dog-dog aggression cases with me, and they'd always turn their heads away when a defensively aggressive dog looked in their direction. If they had stared right back, the other dog would have erupted into low-pitched barks. By turning their heads, they were keeping things relaxed and avoiding the kind of stare-down that sets dogs off. Sometimes confident, high-status dogs turn their heads away from the submissive greeting of a lower-status dog. In this case, it's as if the dog is playing a canine version of hard to get or communicating that they will favor the other with attention only when they feel like it. However, dogs may also look away because they are nervous themselves. A dog who tongue flicks and turns his head away from an approaching stranger is communicating anxiety, and it's not a dog who's going to appreciate petting. Start noticing the orientation of a dog's head when he's meeting new people or unfamiliar dogs. You'll learn a lot about how he's feeling inside. Talking eyebrows. When humans frown, we move the center of our eyebrows down and toward each other. Dogs frown too, and it's another relatively easy signal to read once you learn to look for it. It's clear that these are important signals in social communication. In both species, the muscles above the eyes are accented, by hair in our case, and coloration changes in the cases of most dogs. Look at the photos of Lassie, who has the most expressive face of any dog I've ever had. When we're on our way to the barn to herd sheep, elation flows like sunshine out of every pore of her body. Her mouth opens, heck, her entire face opens, in the kind of relaxed, joyful look that makes you happy yourself just to look at it. However, when she's lying on the floor watching me pack my suitcase for yet another business trip, her eyebrows wrinkle forward in a stunningly obvious analog of a human frown. Lassie frowns so much that one of her nicknames is Frowny Face. Her oft-wrinkled brow is one of the reasons I believe that she's not always a happy dog. Certainly, she was a wreck when she came to me, after being raised by a mother, the canine one, who hated her puppies, and then spending her first year of life in a home with four small children and an overwhelmed single mother, the human one. Living at the farm did her a world of good, and after a year of working sheep, intensive training, and playing with her father, Luke, whom she worshipped, Lassie stopped compulsively spinning in place and licking anything within reach of her tongue. 11 years later, at the mature age of 12, Lassie still seems to take the world with great seriousness. If you took a photograph of her every 5 minutes, most of the images would show a dog with her eyebrows ever so slightly scrunched together. Psychologists tell us that people have a set point of happiness, based on both genetics and early experience, and I have no doubt that's as true of dogs like Lassie as it is with humans. Some dogs rarely frown, so you might not see this expression in your own dog. I don't think I've ever seen Pip or Tulip frown. Luke frowned on rare occasions, when I irritated him with a foolish command while sheep herding, or when I called him off sheep when he didn't want to stop working. He'd also tense up many of the muscles in his face when he was, I believe, anxious about something. In sharp contrast to the smooth, loose muscles of a relaxed dog, Luke's facial muscles would visibly tighten over his entire head. The tension was especially obvious under his eyes. Look at the three photos of the dog named Gus in the middle of the book for a great example of the transition from relaxed and happy to tired and grumpy. Besides his mouth going from open to closed, the most obvious difference in the images is the tension of his facial muscles, especially under his eyes. The faces of worried or tense dogs look almost as if someone had drained the fluid out of them. They lose the full, smooth look of relaxed muscles and give the face a worn-out appearance. Are you all right? Ever had someone say to you, "Oh dear, you look so tired. Are you all right?" You may have wondered if that was an expression of concern or a comment about how bad you look. Thanks ever so much. But the relevant question here is, what was it about your face that led someone to say that? In many cases, our faces get the same look when we're tired as I described above in dogs. We describe exhausted or stressed faces as being drawn, as if someone has drained the rounded fullness of rested and relaxed tissue right out of them. Learn to see this same expression on your dog's face, because exhausted or grumpy dogs can be at the limit of their patience. I don't know how many times broken-hearted clients have told me that Barney had been doing so well. He'd handled the noise and the chaos of the family picnic all day long, but just when everyone was about to leave, he fell apart and snapped, or nipped, or bit. As someone who loves social gatherings but finds them tiring, I have great sympathy for any dog who stays patient and polite all day long, but finally has had enough after 10 hours of commotion. I am grateful, as I suspect are my friends, that I have never bitten, but I know too well the feeling of being emptied of energy. If people could just see the signs of exhaustion or worry on their dogs' faces, there'd be a lot fewer bites in the world, a lot fewer tears, and a lot more dogs living to old age. Disgust. There's another facial expression you share with your dog, and that's the expression of disgust. When people are disgusted, they raise the upper lips, which makes the corners of the mouth appear lower, squint their eyes, and turn their heads away. In extreme cases, they'll wrinkle their noses. Dogs do the same thing, and you'll do well to recognize the look on your own dog's face. I can't tell you how often people in the beginning dog training classes will reward their dogs by giving them a few happy slaps to the top of the head. It may make the owners feel good, but most dogs don't like it any more than young children do, so they turn their heads away and look disgusted. Rather than reinforcing the dog for coming when called, for example, the owners are inadvertently punishing them. If the owners knew to watch for their dog's expression, they'd understand right away that the dog didn't like what he got for coming when called, and might well ignore the signal the next time he hears it. I suspect the primary problem is that we do what feels good to us when we're praising a dog, and often forget to pay attention to how the dog feels about it. Professionals learn to pay attention to a dog's expression as they reinforce a dog for doing what was asked. If we don't, then we can't be sure we're really reinforcing the dog. Positive reinforcement means adding something that makes the dog want to perform an action again, like giving her a tiny, tasty treat for sitting when asked. So by definition, it has to be something that the dog really, really loves and is willing to work for. Rewards, on the other hand, are things that are handed out by trainers or bosses and parents that may or may not be something the receiver wants or cares about. You may get a trip to Hawaii for selling more widgets than anyone else that year, but if you travel all the time for a living, maybe you'd rather have 2 weeks at home. Dogs can't tell us what they want with words, but their faces speak volumes. So next time you praise and pet your dog for doing something you asked, pay careful attention to her face. The easiest situation to observe is when a dog is rewarded with pats on the head when she is in play mode. Just like us, dogs like to be touched and petted some of the time, but not all of the time, and not in every context. We humans can barely keep ourselves from reaching toward our dogs with our paws, because that's natural to us. But most dogs don't want pats on top of the head when they're in play mode, any more than young boys want their mommies to come give them a hug when they're on the playground. If you're not sure what disgust looks like on a face covered with fur, spray some perfume on your wrist and put it right under your dog's nose. We may love flowery and musky smells, but if dogs could make perfume, it would contain the essence of horse poop and rotted squirrel. Let a dog smell some perfume and you'll know right away how he feels about it. If he doesn't like it, which most dogs don't, he'll pull down the corners of his mouth and turn his head away. You and your dog may be disgusted by different things, but you express the feeling in the same way. Keep that in mind when your goal is to reinforce your dog for doing something you requested. Signal stew. I guarantee you that soon after you become adept at reading canine expressions, some dog is going to confuse the heck out of you. Innumerable trainers ask my opinion about perplexing expressions on a dog. One moment, they'll think a particular dog is fearful because his commissure is pulled back straight to his ears in a fear grimace, but the next moment, they think he's not, because his eyes are cold and hard. Perhaps his ears are up while he's leaning forward and barking, but his tail is down. I just can't figure him out, they say. I'm so confused. If this happens to you, don't feel bad. You're not as confused as you think you are. If you think the signals are contradictory, they probably are. I'd estimate that over half of the dogs I've seen in my office exhibit some combination of emotions when they're about to get themselves into trouble. The mixture of signals suggests that dogs can experience two different emotions simultaneously. However, some neurobiologists argue that even humans can't experience different emotions at the same time, although they can rapidly alternate between them. Temple Grandin, the brilliant autistic expert on animal welfare, makes that claim in her book, Animals in Translation. This is another must-read or listen-to book if you want to get a better idea of how non-human animals perceive the world. This is one of the most important books about animals written in the last century, so Dr. Grandin's argument deserves careful consideration. However, it does seem reasonable to think that dogs can be ambivalent, just like people can. That's the best explanation I can muster for the hundreds of dogs I've observed whose expressions and behavior suggest that there was an emotional battle raging inside their brains and bodies. Although we don't yet have a definite answer to what's going on inside them, it should be mentioned that ethologists have argued for decades that many signals used by animals to communicate express conflicting emotions. Most commonly, I see what looks like ambivalence in certain aggression cases, those involving what I call alpha wannabe dogs, dogs who want to be in control of everything and everyone around them, but who are also fearful and have little confidence. This personality type can take some real finesse to work with, because once you successfully treat the dog so that he's no longer fearful, you might be left with a dog who still wants to take over the house. Such dogs do best with a combination of classical conditioning to assuage their fears, a program that helps the owner teach the dog new behaviors, and an understanding that some dogs desperately need their owners to be benevolent leaders. Read me if you can. No matter how good you get at reading subtle changes of expression, some dogs are going to make it harder than others. I think of Black Labradors as the iconic American dogs because both Labs and Americans tend to have such emotionally expressive faces. I met an expressive Lab last week with a face so plastic he reminded me of the actor Jim Carrey, whose face can morph from extremes of joy to concern to anger in a microsecond. Other dogs, often individuals of breeds with fighting in their genetic backgrounds, are much harder to read. Fighters aren't interested in letting you know how they're feeling at the moment. It's to their advantage to keep their emotions to themselves. Because of that, it takes a lot more skill to read changes in expression in these dogs, just as it's harder to read the faces of people from cultures that value hiding emotions, not expressing them. I compare the ability to read canine facial expressions with the skill of reading radiographs. My vet can look at a bunch of fuzzy white blobs on an X-ray film and immediately focus on something relevant, while I'm stuck sorting out the dog's intestines from her stomach. Great dog trainers can do something similar with the expressions on a dog's face. The more experience you have, and the more relevant signals your brain has been taught to look for, the better you'll get. You may not have the time or opportunity to work yourself up to complete literacy, but every one of us, no matter how skilled, can continue to improve his or her ability to read dog. Listening while you're looking. Your dog's vocalizations are also a good indicator of how she's feeling inside. This book focuses primarily on visual expressions, but the sounds your dog makes also contain a lot of information. The barks and whines of our dogs follow the rules laid out years ago by Eugene Morton, who suggested that the vocalizations of all mammals follow certain general principles. Sounds related to offense tend to be low in pitch and noisy, like a low, growly bark, while sounds related to fear or appeasement tend to be higher pitched and more pure in tone, like the yelp of a frightened puppy. Excitement also tends to raise pitch, as anyone knows who's exclaimed, "Whee!" as they sped down a hill on a sled. Tulip barks deep and low when she hears coyotes, but as I run downstairs to put her outside, her barks rise in pitch. While I fumble with the front door, Tulip spins in circles and barks higher and faster, I suspect because she is excited and frustrated that she has to wait for me to perform my part of the job. As soon as I open the door and snap her collar to her tie-out line, her barks lengthen and lower. One of the most practical applications of this knowledge is the evaluation of playing dogs. It's often difficult for people to distinguish exuberant play from a serious scrap, but you can use the sounds you hear as a good indicator. If you start to hear the dog's vocalizations become lower and more growl-like, don't wait for the fight to break out. As we'll discuss in a later chapter, dogs can become overly aroused during play and end up fighting like out-of-control sports fans, so listen for a change in pitch and redirect the players if things start to sound offensive or overexcited. Can your dog read your face? All this brings up a question. What about your dog? While you're reading subtle changes on your dog's face, what is your dog doing? How literate are dogs at reading human faces and postures? I've been writing as if it was a fact that dogs respond to our expressions and postures the way they would to the expressions and postures of another dog. We desperately need more research on this topic, but the anecdotal evidence and the biology of dogs suggest that they are brilliant interpreters of our expressions. In The Other End of the Leash, I wrote about how minor changes in your posture can have major effects on your dog, and I've yet to hear a trainer or behaviorist disagree. Our mutual experiences support the belief that dogs get a tremendous amount of information about our emotional state, and thus what we're about to do next, from our postures and our faces. There are logical arguments as well. If dogs weren't good at reading emotional expressions on the faces of others, they wouldn't be so expressive themselves. If the point is to communicate, then signals have to be interpreted by a receiver. Otherwise, there's no point in sending them. You wouldn't spend a half hour typing out an email to someone who doesn't have a computer. It's not surprising that dogs can interpret expressions on the faces of another species, not when they share many of the same expressions and are hardwired to understand them. Surely, our shared expressiveness and our mutual ability to read the expressions of others is part of what makes our relationship with dogs so emotionally powerful. We're bonded to dogs not just because we are both emotional beings, but because we express our emotions so freely and are so good at interpreting them on one another's faces. Although, I suspect our dogs are better at reading our faces than we are at reading theirs. Be careful what you say or what your dog thinks your face is saying. Sometimes what's on our faces turns out not to be an accurate expression of how we're feeling inside. A few years ago, I worked with an American Eskimo dog who illustrated this point by reacting with friendly relaxation to the approach of one person and nervous, aggressive barking to another. The first person who approached was a relatively short woman who walked toward the dog with her body turned slightly sideways, avoiding direct eye contact, and squatting down about 3 feet away from the dog. She kept her hands to herself, and in seconds the dog ran up to her, body loose and bendy, sniffed her hands, and leapt up to lick her face. Minutes later, a man with a hat and sunglasses approached the same dog, this time with a hand extended. Before he could get anywhere near the dog, she exploded in high-pitched barking, with rounded eyes, dilated pupils, and an offensive pucker. She made it perfectly clear that the man continued his approach at his own risk. Any one of several different factors could have affected the dog's response. Shy dogs are usually more afraid of men than women. Is it their large jaws, big chests, deep voices? We're not really sure, but the tendency is almost universal. The man had walked directly toward the American Eskimo dog. Unlike a friendly dog, who would have approached laterally rather than head-on, and who would have avoided direct eye contact. The hat could also have been an issue. I think hats confuse dogs because they don't seem to get the removable parts aspect of human couture. But there's no question that sunglasses, looking like huge, rounded eyes with completely dilated pupils, are particularly scary to dogs. The dog turned out to be most affected by the sunglasses. She'd let the man approach without them, and then bark herself silly when he put them back on. Same man, same dog, Same seminar room. Sunglasses on, dog barks and lunges forward. Sunglasses off, dog lets man approach and allows herself to be petted under the chin. I don't know how many times I've taken one look at a dog and told my companion to quickly take his or her sunglasses off, but I'm convinced that by doing so, I've avoided lots of sticky situations. I've also seen dogs react in my office to a beautiful painting of my first Great Pyrenees, Bo Peep, that hangs above the chairs in my office. Dogs can be in the office for an hour before they happen to look up and see two large, round, brown eyes staring right at them, at which they erupt in a volley of barks loud enough to wake the dead. Lest you feel smug that we humans are too advanced for such primitive reactions, keep in mind that even as infants, we respond to an image of two dots above a curved line by smiling in return. Our brains are so programmed to those basic units of expression that we respond to them even if they are completely out of context. Think of the popularity of the smiley face that is used universally to convey happiness. There's no reason to believe that dogs don't do the same thing, responding to what they perceive as signals on our faces that are relevant and important to their interactions with us. I would guess that anyone who's ever owned a dog believes strongly that their dog gets a tremendous amount of information from looking at their face. Certainly, our dogs look to our faces all the time when they are confused and want more information. Herding dogs who are unsure of what to do will turn their heads and look back at their humans, in apparent hope of additional direction. Just as children who are unsure of how to solve a puzzle will turn and look at an adult's face for more information, performance dogs will stop what they're doing and turn and look at their handler's face. We can get a tremendous amount of information by looking at an individual's face. What we see there may not always be an accurate reflection of what's going on inside his head, and it may only give us a part of the picture, but the study of faces is one of the best means we have for gathering information about the world around us. That appears to be equally true for both people and dogs. Surely, one of the reasons we have such amazing relationships with dogs is our shared reliance on facial expressions in social interactions. These expressions are windows to what is perhaps the most astounding aspect of our shared biology, the mammalian brain. You can't have emotions without having a brain, so the next chapter takes a look at your brain and your dog's brain and how they function to create emotions.